Thriving, Not Surviving, with your host, Gina Gardner. To lead others, you first need to be the best version of yourself and lead from a place of wholeness. Motivation, empowerment, leadership, personal and spiritual development are just a few of the topics you will hear on Thriving, Not Surviving. So sit back and enjoy the show with your host, Gina Gardner.
Hello there, it's Gina Gardner here and welcome to BBS Radio. I've got a very, very special guest today. His name is Matt Crump and I'm really delighted to have you on the show. Thanks very much for joining us, Matt.
Thank you so much, Gina. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. Now, those of you that have seen the show before will know that I read the bio because they're so rich and I don't want to miss anything important. So, Matt Crump is a published author, certified empowerment life coach, business consultant, and a popular content creator on LinkedIn. Matt serves executives, entrepreneurs, and individuals to align their beliefs with action to achieve their number one goal and live a life of abundance. And with the time that we've been having over previous months, all of those are pretty rich and wonderful things. So thank you for joining us.
Oh, thanks so much again. It's going to be a blast today. I hope you take good care of me.
I will indeed. I promise to.
You will. I know you will.
One of the things that we discussed about you talking about on the show is overcoming life's obstacles. Now, from one person who's become the equivalent of a hurdle racer in terms of obstacles to another, I'd be really great if you could take us on your journey.
Well, that's quite an interesting story. I would say for me, it started when I was a child, about when I was 10 years old. Got a little finicky, a little curious in life, and I decided to start smoking cigarettes at 10 years old, hiding it from my family. And I thought I did a pretty good job. I'm sure I did it most times, but there's a way mom and dad always know something. But I did that with a friend for a while, and then it eventually turned into discovering and digging a little bit into the world of drugs. Started smoking marijuana, doing pot when I was a young teenager. And into high school, started working on a few other things beyond that. And then I joined the military. And when I joined the military, I just went crazy and became a full-fledged drug addict and alcoholic. So it was just quite some obstacles I was facing in my life then. And what really was occurring, I was just running away from everything. I joined the military to run away from home, basically. It was just a paid way to get away, which I did. And I had some great opportunities, great things occur in my life while I was there. I had some major transformational occurrences. Was able to eventually, long story short, I was able to no longer be a drug addict and alcoholic. I was delivered from drug addiction and alcoholism and all the crazy stuff that goes with it, smoking cigarettes as well. Then later on moved into life and my life was changed. I'd become a Christian and given my life to Christ. And I met an incredible woman by the name of Robin in North Carolina. Set up on a blind date with her, which I'll never go on another blind date again, by the way, I'll tell you right now. But anyway, but a blind date with her. And we've been together coming up in May. We'll be 32 years of marriage together since that time on that blind date. And an entire new opportunity in door for both of us. By the time the war was over and I got out of the military, she wanted to finish up in school. And I did as well, got my MDiv in theology and biblical counseling. And I was going to go back into the military. I didn't, stayed a civilian, and had all kinds of ups and downs with businesses and jobs and this, that, and the other. Until about fast forwarding to 2011, I was diagnosed with cancer, melanoma cancer. I was stage 2 at that time, and fought a battle for about a year or so in a surgery, and was told I was good to go. Fast forward again to 2015. And I was on stage getting ready to perform and started coughing up blood and thought it was pneumonia and went on antibiotic pack for about a week or so and still didn't have any change. A friend of mine was a PA and looked at my x-rays and said, hey, I think you need to go back to the cancer center at Duke. I think you've got cancer. I said, for pneumonia? You want me to go? He said, no, he was right. I was stage 4 cancer at that point. Started in my adrenal gland, by my kidney wall, by my leg, and had a transfer to my lung. I already had 4 tumors at that point. I immediately started treatments and therapies and trials and radiation. And within a matter of a few months of that, I had to get medevaced to the hospital because I had a bleeding brain tumor. And I had about 48 hours to live without surgery. So they rushed me in, got the surgery done. And at that point, I had a music store. I had several businesses. And at that point, it was a music store. Had to close that down. And my entire life changed from there. So then up to 2020, where we're at now, I've been battling cancer for 9 years. And of course, through all the things I've been through in the past, the drug addiction, alcoholism, all the businesses and the different experiences I've had, plus, of course, cancer, I've been able to learn a couple of things. I learned the things, what not to do for sure, a lot of those things, and then some other things really the hard way. But specifically this year, just a week and a half ago, part of my cancer battle was I had an extremely long beard. I let it grow very, very long. You met me with a long beard.
And Rumpelstiltskin type of beard, for anybody who wants to know. It was very impressive.
Thank you very much. And I chose to do that when I went stage 4. And part of my battle was cancer. Typically, one of the first things when you're on treatments, it does is you lose your hair. Mm-hmm. And I decided that cancer wasn't going to take me or my hair. So as a sign, I was going to let my beard grow out. And whenever I felt as if I was given the all clear, then I would make the choice to cut my beard off, not cancer. And a week and a half or so ago, I've had my last brain surgery was 5 months ago. I made a choice and a decision to transition from patient to survivor. And I made the choice to go ahead and cut my beard off and move into a different perspective and place in my life than I was before. So it's by God's grace, I'm here and I'm ready to move into whatever he's got for me next.
I'm just thrilled that you are with us. I mean, you truly are a survivor. My mum sadly had cancer, lung cancer, 2 years, she passed. But you have an indomitable spirit that I feel made a real difference.
I tell you, it surely didn't come overnight, that's for sure. There's been very, very difficult times in my life. In any situation, when you're facing something like cancer, I mean, you have to face your own mortality. Mm-hmm. And there's times where I could have probably tossed in the towel, times that got very difficult for me. And I did, there's a lot of value in mindset and positive thinking and versus negative thinking. And I'm not some big guru, ooey gooey, positive thinking guy. However, in that scenario, when you go negative in thought process, I could have easily died. I was supposed to have been dead several times. They gave me 8 months to live. I was supposed to die with a brain tumor. I mean, all kinds of things happened. And I just had, I've got 2 kids as well, which are a big part of it too. I want to be here for my kids. So that was one of the factors of why I wanted to stay around. But I had to make a choice. I'm either going to be a person who is diagnosed with and going to die of cancer, or I'm a person who's going to live life. And you can live life as long as you can. And that's what I was planning on doing. And so far, it's worked out pretty good.
It has. I apologize for the phone. I actually turned it off before we started. How it's ringing, I don't know. But perhaps that's a message, really. That actually, through everything, there is a way through. And one of the things that you talk about is achieving your goals. And after all, you are an empowerment coach, aren't you? Which is all about stepping into your power and achieving your goals.
Right.
So talk us through your approach to that.
Well, I mean, the first thing anybody has to do when it comes down to a goal is first you have to believe that you can do it. Anybody that has any type of goal, aspiration, thought process of anything in life, if you don't think you can do it, well, you're going to get exactly that. I mean, obviously, the first thing you have to do is believe you can. I believe there's a lot of abilities and skills and talents in all of us, so we have the abilities to do. I also believe that God's called me to do certain things on this world and planet, and I feel his direction and guidance in my life, and I don't feel like he gave me a, a big picture of something to do to say, oh, by the way, you're going to die. So it's like, it doesn't kind of add up to what I thought I'm supposed to be doing here, right? Yeah. And we have those kind of motivations in front of you, and you have the big picture when you understand that you have purpose, when there's a future that you can see in front of you, it tends to make you live life differently than someone who says, I've got nothing to live for, and I just can't do it. And I don't think anybody on this planet should be in that position, because I think everyone on this planet has purpose. It may not be to fly to the moon. No, you know, you may be somebody who's putting the fuel in the rocket ship. I don't know. But it all has purpose, right?
I agree. And I think that for those people who think that purpose has to be something big, I think they're missing the point, really. I think we have purpose in terms of the day-to-day, how we live our life. Do we live our life in being kind to ourselves and others? Are we compassionate? Do we have integrity? Do we walk our talk? Are we a role model for other people? All of those give a really strong sense of purpose, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. And you're so right. It doesn't take a big title to be a purpose person. A person lives into purpose.
Yeah.
There's people that are people that we may not even know of that are incredible. I mean, you think about, a lot of folks, they like their grandmothers because grandma always was praying for them or doing something behind the scenes. And maybe nobody doesn't know much about grandma, but grandma's son was Albert Einstein, or grandma's son was whatever. It was somebody. There's always a purpose for somebody. And it may not be the stars, but it's powerful. Whatever we're supposed to be doing, if we do it with all of our ability, it's going to make a difference.
I think for me, one of the things that many people take the line that I can't do something, you know, I want to be a star, I want to be a celebrity, and if I'm not a celebrity, then I'm not important. And I think, particularly in society at the moment, there is a lot of that feeling that if I'm not on the telly, or if I'm not a name, or if I don't have a big bank balance, then my value is diminished.
Well, and that really comes down to one thing, Gina, that comes down to identity. Yes. And identity is not about our position or our titles. It really comes down to the who, the what, right? It's not about the things we get to do. So for me, it's about the opportunity to live into the things that I'm called to be.
But you think it's interesting that we are called human beings, but for the most part, most of us are busy being human doings. And if our doings
Oh, absolutely. It's a lot of conditioning that's been happening over the years for us. And there's a lot of different types of generations. And if you look back a few generations to the World War II era, which I have a strong affinity for, I consider, in the past few hundred years, that era of people are responsible for much of what we get to enjoy these days. There's so much that they've done. And then today's generation, hate to say that, goodness gracious, when I was a kid, you never want to say those things, but it's true. There's so much of a difference between those generations to the generations of today. There's great values in things today, but the culture, the thought processes, the drive, the energy of certain people to do things that were just go-getters, no matter what it took, we're going to make this thing kind of happen. Is so vital, and it really comes into identity and purpose, and to have that instilled in your life, which is still very possible today. There's still people that do that. It's so highly important to be able to share that with other people. If we don't, who's going to do it?
I think that's true. One of the things that I've noticed in the UK, I don't know about America, but during lockdown, one of the things that really struck me is how there seemed to be a rebalance of the way in which people looked at what's important. And there was a realization for many people that it wasn't money, although we need it, but it wasn't money that was the be all and end all. It was about good health, good relationships, looking around and enjoying the natural world and so on. And I'd like to think that will continue, although I think once people get busy and they see things returning to a form of normal, that it's very easy to lose sight of that. And I think that would be very sad to do that.
Oh, I totally agree. I think that, first of all, I mean, that's just the devastation and loss of so many lives that have occurred during this, yes, this travesty in our world is horrific. That's without saying. But on the other side of that coin are so many opportunities for people to embrace things that they've forgotten about. We've gotten so busy, so superficial, that folks don't remember what that was like until they had plenty of time on their hands to think about it. And then things start changing. There's different priorities and different perspectives and thought processes. And I agree with you, the downside of that is going to be, because it's going to happen, unfortunately, for some, it's kind of like going to a movie. When you go to a movie, you walk from your world, your problems, your issues, you go into that movie theater for a couple of hours, and you're transported to a different place, a completely different area, right? And then when you walk out of that movie theater for at least the first minute or two, maybe 2 minutes sometimes, it's this euphoric feeling of like, is this really real, or am I here? Or that feeling, and then all of a sudden it's back to life. And then you don't remember what it felt like at the movie. You can tell the story, but it's not the same thing when you were there. And unfortunately, you know, some of that's going to happen in the lives of people through this experience, which is sad because so many great things have occurred and so many bad things have occurred, that to not learn from those and take this and make it better moving forward is going to be even a worse travesty than what we've just been through.
I agree with you. But what I'd like to do, if I may, is to transition into one of the things that's dear to your heart, is living a life of abundance. And I think, yep, before I ask you to sort of expand that, it would be very helpful to have you identify what you mean by abundance, because it means so many different things to different people.
Sure. Yeah, it's so easy to think immediately abundance means money, which is definitely a part of it. But to me, abundance is a much bigger picture than money. Money is a small part of abundance. Abundance is a holistic opportunity. It's everything in one. It's health, it's mental state, it's physical state, it's all those things wrapped up into one. It's a chance to be able to have your dream job. I haven't worked a day in my life. I love this job so much, said hardly nobody ever. Some people say that, but that's not really true. But there's a great possibility to have some things that are just fantastic, right? So to live in a place of abundance is a place where it's not all about you, but it's about having enough of all those things that you can do it for everybody else too. So it's a giving opportunity. I like to say that givers get. Like, so some folks give to get, but when givers give, the bonuses you get. So to live from a place of abundance is, if you're not living in debt, like a lot of people do, some people live normally on monthly payments. They don't think about what something costs and what it's going to take to do it. They think about what's the monthly payment going to be, and can I take that out of my paycheck every month? Instead of saying, can I really afford to purchase this item and have it done in a certain period of time, right? So to be able to have things and do things and have money left over and time left over and opportunity left over means that when something comes your way and a friend or a family member or a coworker or something like that goes through a difficult time, you just might be able to help somebody. When you're strapped in debt and time constraints and stress and fatigue, you can't. It's a completely different place when you're able to give. So a place of abundance for me is that place where you can have the opportunity to give. It doesn't mean everything's perfect, but it does mean that there's a great opportunity. And to be a person that strives to live in that kind of a place is a person that has a great opportunity to do great things in the world.
I think abundance is one of those things that it's so much about your frame of mind, you know, and I think that if we're able to take away this sort of tying up that abundance is only about money, it's only about material things, then when you start to open it out in terms of an abundance of love, I mean, an abundance of time, of opportunity, then it becomes so much richer, so much deeper, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. When's the last time, Gina, you've ever had somebody come to you and say, you know, Gina, I can't stand how much people love me. It really drives me nuts that I'm loved. I can't stand being loved. I mean, it's just, that's not possible. It's great to be loved, right? It's great to have the opportunity to have those things in life. So to have that abundance in your life is powerful. When you're loved, you love, right?
But of course, you have to start by loving who you are.
Love yourself.
Love yourself and look after yourself and then use the overflow from that for other people.
Well, there's a difference between loving yourself and being self-seeking. Those are two different things.
Loving yourself is not about feeding yourself three donuts and, you know, and five bags of crisps and a couple of beers.
Right.
If you truly love yourself, then you're going to look
up. I should repent from when I did that recently then, should I, huh?
Leads me nicely on to talk to us about your movement, Be the Difference 2020.
Yeah, that's interesting. Glad you brought that up. That wasn't anything on my own radar personally until I wrote an article in the past month or so that I did on LinkedIn, and I was really focusing more on the situations and circumstances that were happening within business and industries around us, and I was able to gather a lot of statistics. And for example, you know, the airline industry is down 96% in revenues this year, which affects hospitality, which affects events, which affects food service, which has so many things, right? It's just a domino effect. And as I was going through these statistics and sharing this story of information with people, a lot of times people say, you know, I just want to make a difference. I want to make a difference. And let's go make a difference. And I think that statement isn't enough, that the difference between making a difference and being a difference is tremendous. So I wrote this little hashtag, Be the Difference 2020. And when I did that, something just kind of clicked on the inside of me with this thought of what that might mean. And I called a couple of people, and within a matter of a few days, I had several people and organizations from around the world that said, we want to be a part of this, let's do this. And it's turned into something quite amazing that is in its launching phase right now. Before the year's out, everything's going to be moving up and running. It's turned into this great, great experience for people to share how to be the difference. So for example, I talk with folks that are entrepreneurs and CEOs, executive world speakers, things of that nature. People that you would think are superstars and really excellent at what they do, right? So instead of these people coming to a platform and saying, here's my program, buy my book, buy this, buy that, we're going to extract their superpower and the four stages of learning. It's called the unconscious competence. So we find that person's unconscious competence through a tool I've created called the fifth gear. And the fifth gear is that next part outside the four stages of learning. It's the conscious competence of your unconscious competence, so that you are now competent of your unconscious competence. So someone who is unconsciously incompetent can become consciously competent in what you're doing, and we change the world. That's a lot of crazy sayings. But at the end of the day, what it means is you have a chance to empower other people, not just with stuff and things, but the actual mojo, the actual thing, that superpower that makes somebody think how they do certain things and why they react certain ways and how they plan certain things out that they don't even think about, that are really what would make somebody else stronger in what they can do.
So extrapolating the essence of modeling excellence in whatever context, so that essence can be absorbed by other people easily, so that initially they can model it, but then make it their own.
Yes, yes, yep. And it doesn't matter niche, it doesn't matter. They're important to align people with certain niches, obviously, but that's not the most important thing. It's about absorbing, like what you said, to be able to, so the person can do what they're empowered to do.
Sounds brilliant. We're almost running out of time, and I don't want to get to the end of this interview without you having an opportunity to say, where can people find you? And if they're interested in the in this movement, how do they get involved with that?
Sure. It's pretty simple. Two things. One for me is my name, Matt Crump. MattCrump.tv is my website. And then the movement is the word, all one word, Be the Difference 2020. That's the 2020 at the end, Be the Difference 2020 dot today. So it looks like Be the Difference 2020 today. So that's the website. And you can get to that through my website at mattgrump.tv as well. So through my website, you can gain access to all the things that I do, working with people, coaching, consulting, and whatnot. And then access to the movement at Be the Difference 2020.
And we'll make sure that all of those details are in the show notes, Matt, so that people don't have to be struggling about
it. What did he say?
Yeah. Make sure that they're all there. I'm assuming that there's going to be a Be the Difference 2021 because we're, you know, we're in the last quarter of the year, more or less, aren't we?
Yeah, I surely hope so. We've got plans for what these this last quarter will do moving into the 2021 season, which we're going to then work with industries and things of that nature too. But it's going to be quite a great big deal. One, it's much bigger than me. I cannot do this myself. I just was the lucky guy that got the idea. So if you're interested in being a part of it, for sure contact me because there's plenty of places for people to take charge with things.
That's absolutely brilliant. That brings us to the end of the interview. Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been really interesting. And I look forward to seeing Be the Difference 2020 grow into something huge. We need it.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you. And don't go away because after the break, we have a genuine chat with Rachel and I. So hang about and I'll see you in a minute. Thanks very much. Bye now.
If you're a businesswoman who is overwhelmed or suffering from imposter syndrome, who is tired of having one disastrous relationship after another, or who finds it hard just to say no, well, it's time to take care of you. You get the best out of life by contacting Gina Gardner, relationship coach and best-selling author and motivational speaker. Just visit genuinely-you.com. Or you can email Gina directly at gina@genuinely-you.com. Take action now. Start to thrive rather than simply survive. Imagine being a highly successful, enlightened leader who is in complete alignment with your best self, who makes a positive difference on a daily basis. Let me introduce Gina Gardner, an expert in developing transformational leadership with over 30 years of experience. Gina has developed a unique and unrivaled approach to help you step into your genuine power to become an enlightened leader. And when you do, amazing things happen. Go to enlightenedleadership.co or email Gina at gina@genuinely-you.com.
Welcome back. Now, those of you that are used to listening to our show will know that Rachel Davidson and I do a genuine chat. That's just exploring a theme and looking at it, obviously, from our perspective. But before we do, let me introduce Rachel Davidson, a very, very talented author. She has a trilogy of books called
Beyond Veils.
Beyond Veils. And they're a spiritual novel. And last night I was involved with her on a meeting to discuss her three books with people who are real fans. And I would really recommend that you buy them. They're available on the website, genuinely-you.com, or on Amazon, or on all the usual places that you can get them.
Bookshops.
And that they are available as books and also as an audio. One of the themes within the books is spiritual connections. And it's a theme that I thought that it would be interesting to explore today, not from the book's point of view, but in terms of life. And how do you connect with what you consider spirit? You know, for some people that will be God, for other people that will be the universe. Ultimately, it's connecting with something that's bigger than us, is my way of looking at it. And you can do that in just so many ways. And so I want you today to just think about this as offering yourself an extra dimension to your life. And when you are aware and conscious of that dimension, it has just so much to offer. So when you think of spiritual connections, what do they mean to you?
I guess I sort of want to start off by saying that a lot of people might hear spiritual connection and possibly sort of get a little bit nervous about the woo-woo nature of it. But, you know, whether you believe in you know, a higher being, whatever your sort of religious perspective is or spiritual, or whether you just think that once you've done here, you just go into a big void of nothingness, return to your basic atoms and that's it, done. There is no afterlife. The fact remains that humanity has, throughout its presence on this planet, tried to search for the bigger meanings. So spiritual connection to me, for me, is as simple as the questions, what's the point? Why am I here? Why do I want to do this? What am I supposed to make of this? Yeah, all of these questions. And each person on the planet does have these kinds of thoughts and considerations. And some of us who have a sort of faith in there being a bigger meaning to our physical presence, talk about it in terms of, you know, communing with spirit, and that there are energies and powers and possibilities beyond just our material self. We do live in a world that's very material driven. I mean, you know, we are literally incarnate. And yet science and our physical manifestation doesn't explain everything. Okay. Yeah. So for me, spiritual connection is really about thinking about the bigger meaning of why I'm doing what I'm doing, what I would like to achieve, what sense of purpose I would like my life to have in it, to overall arc, but also in the little minor moments of sort of what purpose does this minute have for me. For me and many others, I'm interested in the ceremony of certain sort of, you know, spiritual modalities in terms of how you connect to that sense of higher. Again, it doesn't really matter the words that you use around it. If you use the sense of higher self, yeah, or you might talk about, you know, getting in touch with the universe, or some of the sort of more shamanic aspects of spirituality, talk about spirit guides, you know, characters, just to use a writer's term, who are there and available to you to give you particular advice and so on. Other people will talk about angels, yeah?
Or indeed they will talk about God and praying.
Yep, and all of this sort of thing. But ultimately, the simplest place to start is that space within, that word conscience, yeah? Because each of us has a conscience, and I believe that's your soul talking to you. But even if you don't believe that you have a soul, you still have to admit that there is something inside you, a little voice that will say, "Are you sure you should be doing that?" When you're sort of stepping outside of what might not be for your better interests, or the interests of the people around you, or the interests of the world, yeah, there's still a little knock, knock, knock. Really? So that sort of space within, and Michael Neal, who I can't remember his company name, but he has the podcast Caffeine for the Soul. He wrote a book called The Space Within, and essentially it's his manifesto for how to commune with spirits, which is, you just need to ask yourself the questions that you have, and the answers are there. But you need to probably quieten yourself and practice listening to yourself. And then you go to the other extreme, where there is great theatre and ceremony around connection to spirits. And I think the truth of it is all and nothing of those. I think each of us finds our way in each particular moment. And I believe that the bigger purpose of our life will be explained to us no matter what we do. I know there is a lot of good talk around positive mental attitude and manifestation, but I don't believe that having negative thoughts about yourself can derail you from what you are intended. I think it might delay you, but it won't derail you. So communing with spirit, even though in my books I wrote particular sort of aspects for my characters, but then of course I am trying to tell an interesting story. I think in day-to-day life, if you want to commune with spirit, you simply have to stop and ask. And it's as simple as that.
I think, and thanks for that. I think I agree with you. My view is that we are on a lifelong journey of learning, and that the opportunities to learn from our inner wisdom, from what is going on in the broader picture, is all part of our need, if you like, to connect with spirit, to connect with ourselves, to connect with the wider environment, and that those messages that are there to say, you know, you have value in and of yourself, that you have the capacity to be the better self if you choose to, if you listen to that conscience, I think has the capacity to help us learn quicker and deeper. And it's interesting for me, whether your faith is a particular religion or a particular form of spirituality, for me, they're like the facets of a diamond. That whilst they may look different and they may reflect a slightly different light, ultimately, that at the core of it's the same. Mm. And that finding what works for you is really important. And I think so many people feel lost at the moment because they've been attracted by the bright, shiny thing of materialism, thinking that, you know, if I have a bigger car, a bigger house, more clothes in my wardrobe, etc., that I will feel better about myself and that I will have greater value. Because for me, the spiritual connection is all about, how do you learn to value yourself? How do you learn? And how can you make a positive difference in the world? Hmm. And I think you absolutely hit the nail on the head when you say, we need to quieten the noise. We need to go within. The answers are always within if we choose to look for them. And that takes courage sometimes, because sometimes the message that we get from within isn't what we want to hear, or isn't an easy message necessarily to hear, and often requires us to let go of something that's giving us comfort, but is in reality that comfort is an illusion. You know, it's the comfort of the donut that makes us feel connection with ourselves because we are lonely, rather than dealing with the fact that we're feeling lonely. It's the drink, it's the going shopping, it's the sense that my bank balance is bigger than your bank balance, so that makes me feel in some way that I've made it.
Hmm. And of course, you know, there is a reason for us existing in this material way, and I don't mean material just as in sort of the Western capitalist aspect of it. I mean, you know, literally a sort of a physical, solid manifestation.
Yeah.
There is a reason why we have that aspect to it, that separation. But I mean, ultimately, the world is only ever viewed from your eyes.
Absolutely, and your perspective becomes the reality, your reality, not the only one, but it's yours.
Sort of, you know, go outside of yourself to try to achieve fulfillment is against the nature it's against the nature of how you are constructed. So even for the simplest of questions, and even in the simplest of ways, the truth has to always start with you. I was reading a book. I'm so bad with author names. He wrote Who Moved My Cheese?
I know the book well, but I can't remember who wrote it either. You know the
name. Of being bad about authors' names. It's called Just Take a Minute for Yourself. And it's a really, really simple book, as is Who Moved My Cheese, to get across what is a common experience of all humans on the planet, which is how can you become happier and a more pleasant person? How can you achieve what you want to do? And he is really talking about the fact that, start with yourself. He talks about it very, very much specifically as in sort of how we train kids to not be selfish. And of course, selfish is quite a pejorative word. Most people, if you called them selfish, would be horrified that you were calling them that. But the word itself, its actual meaning isn't pejorative. It just means that the base understanding of all spiritual law is me first. Because that is where you can, that's the only place you can start.
But it's the only thing you have control over, isn't it?
Yes. And actually, if you kind of sort yourself out, and if you're kind to yourself and looking for how you can be, he's got a particular phrase in the book, which I can't remember off the top of my head, but basically how in this minute can I be good to myself, kind to myself, is the kind of thing that he sort of is asking. And the point being is that, if you're feeling unloved by another person and you're starting to get a bit knocked by that, the answer is actually to ask yourself how you can make yourself feel more loved, how you can make yourself feel more loved. Not how can I manipulate that person over there to love me more? How can I make myself feel more loved? And then he quickly points out that if you really take on board that message, what you will find is that the answer is, I could be more loving. So again, that's an outward energy of intention to the outer world of me. This is preached by lots of people, religious or otherwise. If you want to feel better about yourself, go and help other people, yeah? Start with the first understanding of you need to start with yourself. You mustn't just dash over and help. You must do a proper statement of what is it that I am feeling and how can I make myself better? So always, always starts with that.
You look at the Christian concept, love your neighbour as yourself.
But first of all, I would like that the other way around. Love yourself and then go and love your neighbour.
In fact, you can't go and love your neighbour as yourself unless you love yourself.
No, but I do think that in lots of societies, certainly in female peer groups, we're taught that it's all about going over there and doing that first and then expecting some kind of feedback loop.
Yes.
Because the best thing to do would be to feed yourself in your own house first, make sure that you're, really good, and then if you've got anything left over, pop over the road and feed your neighbour.
And I think the other thing that I want to make a distinction between is being kind to yourself and being indulgent. Because there is a huge difference, it's certainly in my book, that being kind to yourself is actually, doing what is good and right to keep you healthy physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. It's not about, I'm going to make myself feel better by using external influences, or I'm going to let myself off the hook because actually holding myself to account is tricky and challenging and difficult. When you truly love yourself and you accept that you have wobbly bits and things that are not as good as they could be, but you're prepared to work on them.
I think that has to be sort of judged. There are moments where indulging myself is exactly what I need. And from an outside perspective, somebody might look at me and say, well that's a bit self-defeating, isn't it? But it's exactly what I need. So I think again, it's always, you know, the devil is in that detail.
You say it, and in the interpretation, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, why are you making those choices? Why am I making that choice? Why in having this, insert whatever the indulgence is, will I feel better? What other options are there that that won't risk the fallout of that indulgence versus this? But, you know, I think you just got to keep it a bit simple and know that spirit is not a malignant force. The universe is not malignant. It's tough, and you can see that in how Mother Nature works, you know. But generally speaking, the cosmic forces or each individual human on the planet is not generally setting out to do some harm if they are, you know, balanced and so on and so forth. That generally speaking, it's a benign force. And yeah. And you just need to, often I think the sense of coming inside oneself and human space is just to recognize that, you know, this is a benign universe that we're in. And actually, if it's intended for you, if you intend it for you, then it won't pass you by. If you don't turn up and be present and, you know, work, it might not happen in exactly the way that it could have done, maybe, because there will be opportunity costs. But ultimately, it, you know, you don't need to get too sort of strung up on thinking the right things at the right time and doing the right things. And, oh my God, I've ruined my life now because I had that donut.
And that's not quite what I was suggesting, but we're actually running out of time. I think this is going to have to be a theme that we come back to. The important message to take out of today is recognize that you're on a learning journey, and, you know, be kind to yourself. Give yourself opportunities to step off the treadmill, to be still, be a human being, not a human doing, and recognize that the truth is within. And if you're prepared to look for it, you'll find it. I've got to say thank you very much for joining us today. This is a debate that will go on. I've no doubt we're going to revisit it. There's lots and lots to say. But thank you very much for joining us on today's show. You'll find lots of information on the website, genuinely-hyphen, and then the word you.com. There's loads of free resources. Go and sign up for the Genuinely You with Gina Gardner YouTube channel, and you'll find there's lots there. Both our books, all our books are on Amazon and on the websites. So please, please go and help yourself. Take care, and we'll see you next time. Thanks very much. Bye-bye now.